town you never heard of.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
All right. Welcome back to Common Folk.
That's right. I mean, we talked about it. We said we're going to take the show on the road.
Yep.
And we're doing just that. We're up in Winnebago, Nebraska. And who's our guest today?
This is Aaron, right?
Yeah. Aaron LaPointe. I got his new card
Aaron
here.
LaPointe.
Senior Director of Business Operations. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think a lot of people are saying, what is Ho-Chunk? What is what is all this stuff?
Maybe give us like a little, like you said, I mean, we're up here in Winnebago. What is this all about? What are we doing?
Yeah. So I read an article a few years ago, and it was post pandemic, and it was talking about this tribe up in Northeast Nebraska, how like a light bulb moment or a eureka type of deal where we might need to be a little bit more food secure. We're not near as food secure as we thought maybe we were. So changes started to happen. Farming practice started to change a little bit. And the guy that they kept snagging for all these interviews and all these articles I was reading was Aaron LaPointe. And I kept thinking, I always kept him in the back of my mind, like, man, I got to get a hold of this guy. We got to get him on the show because this story is fascinating on so many different levels. There's so many different factors at play here. But at the crux of it all is something that we talk about a lot, and that's food security, you know, taking care of your own. We even had a little, had been one of the first ones we did where the government wanted to know if you were doing a garden in your backyard.
Mm, that's right.
You know, yeah. So like we've always kind of talked about this stuff, but this is on a much bigger scale. So Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be a part of the show.
All right, man. It's good to meet you. I don't know how you want to start, Andy, but I was thinking if we could learn a little bit about Aaron and kind of, you know, how you came up and what you've got going on around here, you know, what you obviously you went to school, what you went to school for and all that kind of stuff. So could we start with maybe where did you get your beginnings? Where did little Aaron start?
Well, I was born and raised here in Winnebago, Nebraska. I've lived here my whole life besides when I went off to school. But I'm an alumni of St. Augustine's, which is our local school here, and then alumni of Winnebago Public School. All of my early years were spent here. I did go off to college for a little bit. I was in Sioux City for a while, and then where I finished at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, I lived in Lincoln for a while, and I studied agriculture.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy because there's not a ton of agriculture here prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
The whole reason why I even went into agriculture is I just see an opportunity for us. As you can see on the map behind me, we have a huge reservation, mm-hmm. 120, 130,000 acres, and I feel like we weren't utilizing it to the best of our abilities. So
you had the foresight when you were younger to think like, there's not a lot of this going on here. I'm going to take a leap. I'm going to go to school for this. Hopefully this is going to work.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to come back and just try to get everybody to rally around it.
Yeah. Well, when I was in college, Ho-Chunk Farms had actually started already. It was very new though. They weren't really sure what it was going to be. There was a lot of issues on the reservation when it came to land management, when it came to farming, when it came to food access, tons of different things. And so I just seen that more as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I come from a family of leaders. My father was the tribal chairman when he passed away. My grandfather was on the tribal council and a very iconic tribal leader for the Winnebago tribe. And I always seen it as an opportunity for me to kind of find my passion, my path in mm-hmm. leadership around agriculture. So that's what kind of caused me to really focus in on it. And then, with Ho-Chunk Farms being established already, I seen, well, if I can go get my degree in this, I was already familiar with Ho-Chunk Inc. and all the great things they were doing. I thought, well, I think there's a pathway for me if I can go on and execute education in that field. So
it's cool.
That's really what did it for me. And then,
yeah
I was... I told people when I was on East Campus in Lincoln all the time, I was like, mm-hmm. I didn't grow up on a farm. I bought my first pair of cowboy boots after graduating college. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't what I grew up around.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like I said, it was more of an opportunity thing and more of the legacy that a lot of my family leaders left behind that I wanted to continue with. So
what were you exposed to when you were younger that like lit that fire for you as far as agriculture goes?
I've always said that I didn't want to sit behind a desk.
Mm-hmm.
for the rest of my life when it came to my job. I love hunting. I love fishing. I love to be outdoors. Like, I grew up that way. And I always thought, well, maybe farming is that for me. Then maybe I can go and sad to say, I do sit behind a desk all the time now, but
it happens, nice desk.
But it does. But I got the opportunity. There's a pathway for me to get out of the office every once in a while too. Mm-hmm. So when I was trying to think about, well, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? Especially if I'm going to be spending this much money going to school. Well, I want to do something that makes me happy. And I'm happy when I'm outdoors. So let's look at agriculture as an opportunity. Jeez. And yeah, so I moved forward in that direction. And I, once I got into the school and I got into the nuts and bolts of what agriculture is, that's when the passion mm-hmm. sparked, was like, this really is something that our community could use. So I stuck it out. And then once the CEO here at Ho-Chunk Inc. found out that we had a tribal member studying agriculture, and we mm-hmm. just started Ho-Chunk Farms and it was struggling, and he thought, well, we got to get that kid here and we got to get him a job. So I did an internship here after my junior year, and then that kind of got my foot in the door to where, right out of college, I started in May of 2016. It was like 2 weeks after I graduated, I was started here at Ho-Chunk Farms. And
nice.
After about 9 months, they made me head of the company. And then it was like, well, now I get to, it was so early in its stages that it allowed me to kind of morph the vision for Ho-Chunk Farms. What do I want it to be? And that's what I've had the pleasure of doing for the last 8 years now.
So I want to wrap my head around something a little bit. What would be the population here? Like, is there a number for the members of the tribe?
So our members of our tribe are much different than our population here. We have tons of tribal members that live off reservation.
Okay.
But if I had to throw a number out there, I want to say we're probably close to 2,500 people that live here.
Okay.
And we're at about 5,600 tribal members.
Okay.
A majority of our tribal members live off reservation.
So one of the things I'm thinking about is, you know, your experience with school, and you go there and you've got this idea that, like, I want to bring something back that's going to help the people, and we're going to help take this to the next level, and this is a good plan for folks, and, you know, these kinds of things. So you think about a kid that goes off to school with those kinds of plans, and you think about traditionally, like, could have been one of my friends, you know, that I grew up around that went to school for the same kind of thing and was going to be bringing back to the family farm, you know, a group of 5 or 10 people, you know, some new ideas, some new education, those kinds of things. But for you, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to bring something new back to 2,500 people mm-hmm. or more. Like, I'm thinking about influencing all of that, not just my family operation.
And I mean, that's the approach that a lot of our Ho-Chunk Inc. entities take on our tribal programming. I mean, we're not doing it for any individual. We got a huge community here that depend on leadership, and that's really what kind of helped me. Kind of gives me that little boost of energy every day is that mm-hmm. it's, I mean, we're making decisions, we're planning the future for 5,600 people, not for my family, not for an individual. So,
and you've said it a couple times now, and I want people to really understand what it is, because you said Ho-Chunk Industries, Ho-Chunk Corp. What is Ho-Chunk?
So Ho-Chunk Inc. is the economic development arm of the Winnebago tribe. So we're 100% owned by the Winnebago tribe, and our focus is really economic development. But it's kind of evolved over time. It used to be money, and now it's mm-hmm. now let's make Winnebago a better place. How do we do that? Let's create jobs. Let's create opportunity for our community. Let's push the housing initiative. So now it came down to, I mean, you can go drive by our Dollar General. It's written right on the side of our Dollar General. To do one thing, you got to do everything. We can't just make money and bring it back. We've got to help people by giving them opportunity and putting structures in place that allow them to succeed. So that's really what Ho-Chunk Inc. is. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty big company. If you look at, we're an international company. We're all around the country. We're doing many different things. It's crazy because people look at Ho-Chunk Farms, 7,000 acre farm in Northeast Nebraska. That's pretty sizable. 1,000 acres of organic. That's one of the largest organic operations in the area too. But we make up less than 1% of Ho-Chunk Inc. And mm-hmm. it's crazy to put it in that perspective, because it just shows the amount of work that's being done outside of just what you see here in Winnebago. Mm-hmm. So, our approach at Ho-Chunk Inc. is the outside in. Let's go outside. Let's gain knowledge. Let's gain resources and bring it back to our community and make it a better place. So, if you haven't seen Winnebago, say 10 years ago, it's a much different place today. Mm-hmm. So, and it's being driven by tons of different entities within Winnebago, from the tribal level to to Ho-Chunk Gang.
So. When you say, you know, being such a different place, like what kind of things would you say are so much different today than 10 years ago?
I would say just the physical look of our community. We've we've built a town just across the street from where we're sitting today. And you've also seen our school system evolve. We have a new hospital. We have tons of different things happening in Winnebago. The population growth is crazy here. You see a lot of small rural towns struggling with population. Everybody's going to the cities. Let's move to the city. There's opportunity there. Well, Winnebago has grown, and it's not very common in Nebraska to see that. So yeah, it's a combination of all those different things, but I think it's really a reflection of opportunity. Before, when people from Winnebago, say, would go get their education or they pursue a career, they would have to leave the reservation to do so. Now that opportunity is here, and people are coming back, and now you can buy a house, you can buy a lot here, and build a house. Yeah,
very nice house.
And so I think that's what's allowed us to grow in many different ways. So.
Cool.
And part of that growth, I gotta say it, you know, I'm a sports broadcaster.
Okay.
Your boys basketball team.
Yeah.
I mean, over the last decade or so, they've turned into a powerhouse. Yeah. Everybody knows about these guys. And that was probably one of the most, my favorite games ever to call. 2018, you guys and Wahoo. And it went right down to the wire. You know, you guys were that close to being state champs. And I'm a Purdue State guy.
Okay.
So David Wingett just got all conference honors. So
yeah, that's my nephew.
<He's>, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
His mom is my sister.
Well, he's one of the best basketball players I ever covered. So,
and I was actually, I've been the boys basketball coach for a long time. So I was coaching that game against Wahoo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. How many technicals did you get there?
I was the assistant coach, so I just shut up and listened.
I'm kidding. So I'm always interested in like naming and what things mean. And maybe it's obvious, maybe you know, but what does Ho-Chunk mean and where does it come from?
So Ho-Chunk is actually what our people are called. So the Winnebago tribe is we're here in Winnebago, but our homeland is in Wisconsin. So the Ho-Chunk Nation in Wisconsin, those are our people. We've just been relocated over many years.
Okay.
And a portion of the Ho-Chunk Nation ended up in Northeast Nebraska after like 6 or 8 moves or something like that. So we still carry that. We're still Ho-Chunk people. But we're just members of the Winnebago tribe.
Interesting.
Same people, same. Yeah. We have tons of family in Wisconsin. It's all the same people. So that's where that name comes from.
So there was a new name created when the people were moved to Nebraska.
Yep. The Winnebago tribe was established then.
Okay.
So, but we're all the same people. Ho-Chunk Nation and Winnebago tribe are the same people.
Cool.
And I noticed that Lambeau Field.
Yeah.
You guys have big old Ho-Chunk. I think you're promoting the casino.
Yeah, Ho-Chunk Sports. Gaming is pretty big in Wisconsin.
Yeah. So I did notice that. My brother just went up to a Packers game last year. So
that's I never knew that. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So the organization, the Ho-Chunk organization that you work for, not just the farming side, but just the organization in general, how long ago was that established?
In 1994.
94.
So we're coming up on 30 years here. I just asked our CEO about that. It's in September. Will be 30 years since we were established. So yeah, I think we have 75 subsidiary companies under Ho-Chunk Inc. Ho-Chunk Farms is just one of those.
And was it originated with the group in Nebraska or with the group in Wisconsin?
In Nebraska.
Okay.
Yep.
And when was the Winnebago established in Nebraska?
I'm sorry, I can't reference that.
We're talking about a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, okay.
In the early 1900s.
Okay. Kind of putting everything together there. So,
Yep.
All right. So, can we fast forward?
Yeah, man.
All right. So, this article that I read, and I think it might have been the Sioux City newspaper, was doing a bit on you and what you had going on, and you had like a light bulb moment, like, we got to change some of the things, some of the practices we do. And Ho-Chunk Farms could be a big driver for this. It could help us with being having some food sovereignty, things of that nature. So I guess, what was that light bulb moment for you? Like, go back to 2020 and when you started seeing things change, and really it changed for everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, well, as a tribe, we were being very proactive even prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, when I first came back after graduating, we started a food sovereignty task force, and that was all based off of some data that our healthcare facility had collected showing are huge issues with diabetes, high blood pressure. Mm. Well, what's the causing issues of that? Well, it's people's diets and what mm-hmm. they have access to. So, and then after doing a survey through that, it was like, wow, we can tie all this stuff together. It's what people eat, and then it's these diabetes yeah. and high blood pressure issues. Well, how do we combat that? Well, I think it's really combating the bringing food access to Winnebago, and because through all the surveys that were taken, it showed that people really just don't have access to it. We have a Dollar General mm-hmm. with frozen pizzas, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. So
and Mountain Dew.
But like we've identified that, and yeah. and we have all the tools to combat that. So this food sovereignty task force was established way before that, like I said, in 2016, and it includes our college, Ho-Chunk Farms, our nonprofit, the hospital, everybody that has some say in when it comes to health, whether it's the production of food or our hospital. So getting all that information, we decided, well, we really need to start finding ways to combat this. And that's where Ho-Chunk Farms established like these garden initiatives, all these different sort of local production initiatives. And then that's when the farmer's market that we mm-hmm. may have read about too, that was established in 2019. Well, people are starting to grow their own food. I think when we first did it, we gave out like 200 raised garden beds and we tilled like 75 gardens. We gave them seeds, starter plants, fertilizer, built them for wow. our seniors, like pretty yeah. much gave them everything they need just to start. I mean, just start thinking about producing mm-hmm. your own food, because we will see the ripple effects when it comes to the physical health in the community. Mm-hmm. So we started a lot of those initiatives way back then. And then I think what you're talking about with the pandemic was just one of those eye-opening things, like, yeah, what we were talking about is true. Like when all of our food sources were shut down and shelves were empty in the stores yeah. and things yep. like that, you start to realize, wow, we really depend on a lot of people for the basic necessities to survive. Mm-hmm. And so that's when it was like one of those articles may have spoken on was like a oh shit moment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We really need to change what we're doing within our communities and be more self-reliant on our internal abilities to produce mm-hmm. for ourselves. So that's when we went into livestock. We raise cattle now. We're building a poultry operation right now. We started a nonprofit farm, the Tribal Farm, which they'd have like a 2-acre garden. They have orchards, they have chickens, they do a little bit of everything.
Okay.
And all of that kind of stemmed from the realization of wow, we depend on a lot of people just to eat. So that all happened prior to that. So I thought we were in a great position during the pandemic.
Yeah.
There was a lot of government programs that came out that gave us free food and all of this, that all these fruits and vegetables imported from all over the world, when we really could just depend on our local farming operations to sustain us. So that's kind of a little bit of background on how this all came about. And it took tribal leadership. It took people that were passionate about seeing change mm-hmm. To really come together. And that's something that's a little unique to what we do at the food sovereignty committee level, or whatever you want to call it, is we bring all the right people. Like we bring everybody involved. Let's come together. We're all doing some sort of
yeah.
of initiative to help fight diabetes, high blood pressure, whatever that is, mm-hmm. or produce our own food. Well, why don't we come together and complement each other and actually have more of an impact as taking the more holistic approach?
How hard is that for you and maybe others to, you know, you say this and now you're doing it, but it's one of the things where when we actually hurt other nations, I'm saying as the United States, we'll go over to Africa and just give free rice and all this free food while the local farmer is trying to make something and sell it. Well, you can't beat free.
Yep.
So here you just said you had fruit and vegetables shipped in from all over the world. And here you are trying to, yeah. you know, tell everybody, no, just plant your own, grow your own, you know,
yeah.
like it just feels like the big brother is trying to undercut you and Ho-Chunk Farms. Like, yeah. So is there a strife with you and local guys, or how does that all come together?
No, I think it's embracing those people that are willing to do that. During the pandemic, that fresh produce program was good, but now it's gone. It's like, well, yeah, that's fine and dandy in the emergency when they do things like that. But it also shows, hey, we need to take care of ourselves and we can't depend on people to come save us in times like that. So, but we had been doing so much work prior to that that had allowed us to be somewhat sustainable.
Yeah.
I mean, we definitely took advantage of all those other opportunities, but I think moving forward, even from that, we've seen tons of different changes. Like every year we do like our garden tilling projects and we do our Indian corn project. You may have seen stuff about our Indian corn.
Saw the video on that.
Things like that. Like we do a lot of those different initiatives and we track our growth in those areas. I mean, we till, it's probably closer to 100 gardens every year. Hmm. I mean, some of them from just this little plot where they want to do strawberries to these large, huge gardens. Like my sister is trying to set the bar for Winnebago right now with this huge garden. Like that's the type of stuff that we like to see.
Yeah.
And we're the people that are, hey, we'll come till it. Oh, you need compost. Oh, you need this. We give away starter plants at the farmer's market. Like we're just trying to get everybody on board with, we think if people start producing their own food, they'll start eating a little bit better because they'll start, and they'll start to appreciate their food a little more too.
Absolutely.
But you kind of got to put your money where your mouth is when it comes to things like that too. Because if we're going to support these people, we got to do it in the best way that we can do it. So,
well, because ag is hard, farming is hard. And then you run into this other, just a bizarre branch where someone's, like I said, trying to undercut you and like, well, here's, you don't need to farm. Look at all this free stuff. And like, you got to overcome that too. And what you have is, I just think it's amazing what you've been able to. So fast forward 3.5-4 years later, how are all these projects going or developing?
They're going well. Our farmer's market is just starting to build back a little bit more traction. I mean, just to kind of speak on what you just said, I mean, we struggle because we do get some vendors down there, but we're competing with free too. I mean, we have, you look at the SNAP program, you look at the FDIPRA program. I mean, these are free programs that our local vendors are competing with, which, I mean, yeah, we want to develop entrepreneurs and that's great, but a lot of our producers are just growing for their own self-need too. And I am totally okay with that. If people can do that for themselves. Now we fast forward to where we're at now. I mean, our Indian corn project has blown up. It's huge. Like this last year we had 125 participants. In a town like this, that's a lot of people to come together on a work day to step away from what they're doing.
Yeah, tell Ben what that is, because that was
I'm not familiar. Yeah.
Yep. So our traditional Indian corn was something that we took on an initiative back in 2017 just because we had about three producers in our community. One of them was our Catholic church, and it's a cultural practice that has much more significance than food. Than just corn.
Sure.
I mean, there's certain stories that are shared at that time. It's the community element, the family element of just coming together. Because this isn't easy. I mean, you pick it by hand, you process it by hand, you dry it. I mean, it's very tedious work, but it creates an environment or a platform for you to come together as a family. And I did this alongside my auntie Sarah Snake. And we had permission from my grandmother, who's the tribe's matriarch. She just turned 93 not too long ago.
Wow.
And it's her family seed that had made all these, I just talked about, we're from Wisconsin. We made all these movements through all these tough times. Our family seed made it here. And my grandmother gave us the okay to move forward with it, because it really is something that people are, they're a little hesitant, like sharing seed. Mm-hmm. Like there's been so many things taken from us that's one thing that we don't want being taken advantage of. So, but she gave us the ability to do it. And through that, we've been able to develop a seed bank where we give it to tribal members, as long as they agree not to grow it for seed, because we do have to protect it. But through that, that's what kind of has gotten people to step outside of their comfort zone when it comes to agriculture. Because like I said, I mean, I didn't grow up on a farm. We didn't have a farm to even know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So we're growing crops and we're growing farmers on top of that. Like we got to teach these people how to be farmers. So that initiative started in 2017. We had three producers. This last year, I think we planted a total of like 17 acres, which is a lot. Back in 2017, there was about an acre to an acre and a half.
I mean, it's a real lot if you consider that everything has to be worked by hand.
It's all hand-picked. Yes. And it's literally each kernel is taken off by hand too. So 17 acres isn't no joke.
I mean,
But it's a project that has helped create a sense of community, sense of cultural preservation, because a lot of these stories are being shared. Mm-hmm. I love to see it. When you guys should come check it out one time and talk. We can talk, or you can witness the environment that it creates.
Yeah,
we're doing it over an open fire, so we got to prep the wood. That creates a platform for our young male folks to share stories and and create friendships and things like that. Mm-hmm. But then there's the environment of, like, we have our elders over here helping. We do it in partnership with our school. So we have 75 students that do it there. And all these kids are learning about culture, food, and kind of reconnecting with their roots. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty cool thing to witness. And this year was awesome. We have some social media videos sharing the success of it, but it's just evolved into, it was this one little canopy that we had out at our farm site with like five people doing corn, to a brand new farmer's market pavilion with over 125 to 150 people all doing the same thing in an environment that just, it's great medicine, great energy. Yeah. Like it's pretty cool.
And it's with an heirloom seed.
Yep.
You know, like,
yeah. God, yeah, there's a lot cool of pride in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does, just from a farming standpoint, does any equipment get used at all from beginning to end, like from planting or tilling the ground or prepping the dirt or anything like that?
Yep. We farm it organically, just like we do all of our other organic crops. Mm-hmm. I mean, poultry manure as fertilizer, and we do go out and plant it with our own planters, and and we typically have to work the ground a little bit because it's organic. So weed control and organic usually equals a little bit of tillage or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's really a cool process. I think you guys should go check out the video that talks about from the, before we even break ground or anything, we offer tobacco and we offer a prayer and we ask the Creator for a good crop and let him reassure him that we're going to do everything the right way. Mm-hmm. And the products that are being grown or the crop that's being grown is going to be used in the right way. And then right before we harvest, we do the same thing. We offer tobacco and we give him thanks. Thank you for the great weather, for the great crop. And then we move forward with harvest. And there's a whole learning opportunity right there. I love it because we partner with the school and the kids go offer tobacco to a tribal elder and have him say the prayer. They get to do all of this. They don't get to hop in the tractor because those are expensive and I can't afford to replace them.
Drive them too fast.
So we do some parts of it, but they get to learn all of that all the way till the end when it's dried. And then they sell it to us as a fundraiser for their educational trips that they take. But what we buy, we give away as donations to all the funerals in the community. Hmm. So that's what our Indian corn is used for, many different ceremonies, but one of the ones that is very common is on the last day after a funeral, they have corn soup, and that's, we try to take that burden off the family that lost a loved one by donating a couple of quarts. And I mean, this stuff isn't cheap. It's $35 a quart.
I'm sure.
So us offering a couple of quarts to help them in their time of need, but it's cool because it's the kids that did that. It's there were so many opportunities for learning. There was all this culture being shared, and then at the end we get to help a family in need, which is really cool.
Comes full circle. What is it? How does the like when you do the harvest and then you dry it down and you prepare it and that kind of thing? How does it get used? Like, does it just get ground up and then?
It gets rehydrated, so we dehydrate it, and then when you're going to make it, it's used in soup. So you rehydrate like
whole kernels.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's really a crazy harvesting process. Like we pick it at the milky doughy stage, so it's not totally dried out or anything. And then you have to blanch it in boiling water, remove it by hand, then re-dry it out. And then once you do cook it, then you rehydrate it. Then it's usually cooked in like a beef broth with beef or bison or whatever type of meat.
Yeah. In the drying process, you put it just under the sunlight on screens, right? And just let it sit there for 2 or 3 days till it dries out.
That's a really cool part of our project too, because there's a lot of people in our community or other people, other producers that have come up with ways of mechanizing the process. Mm-hmm. But my grandmother would not allow me to do anything like that. She's like, if we're doing this for cultural preservation, we're not going to mechanize it. Mm-hmm. People are going to learn how to do this the way it's always been done. And that's something that we hold strong to within our project is we can, there's tools that make it a lot easier, but then the stories don't get shared. Sure. The appreciation you have for corn soup after you actually go through the whole process, you take a lot more appreciation for that soup once you actually have to do it all yourself.
I bet.
So, and I went to school for mechanized systems management, so I already have all the ideas of how we can make it easier.
Right.
But that's not what we're doing
it for. Pump the brakes.
Yeah.
Pump the brakes on this one. It's pretty good that you had the foresight, and awareness to like, we need to kind of embrace the traditions here more so than just getting it done on time or getting that crop up.
Yeah.
Or what have you.
One quick question I had before we get into some of the farm ground stuff. You mentioned livestock. So are you guys raising a lot of your own livestock and providing for folks here with that?
Oh, we're doing a lot more. I didn't go to school for livestock, and we don't really have anybody on staff that is ready for that. We've been, during the pandemic, everybody was freaking out. So we actually bought like 100 head of cattle, and we were just having them custom fed down the road. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of continued to do that. So that's on the livestock side. It's more custom. We're having people feed them for us. During the pandemic, we did have a couple of them harvested for our community and just gave it away. Yep. So it was more of a food security thing. Then it turned into an economics thing because we learned how to make money raising cattle. Mm-hmm. And now it's taking those next steps forward to diversify into the actual production of livestock. Yep. So it's actually in our 2024 annual plan. We do have a project that'll bring the production of livestock to our operation. Because we farm almost all the tribe's land. And a lot of the allotment land, which allotment land is owned by individual tribal members. So we farm almost all of that when it comes to what we can do here. Well, our growth is really probably going to be in livestock now because we've gotten so far along with our capacity of land. So that's why land acquisition is very important for us, because for us to grow, we need to buy. Mm-hmm. But we also know to be sustainable as a business, we need to diversify as well. That's why we've diversified into organic. We can't depend on the commodity market. The producers out there right now are probably hoping that they had some organic stuff to fall back on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's finding a balance from a business standpoint, but also diversifying to be able to fit our local needs of food security and food sustainability.
Makes sense.
So that kind of takes us right to the next part, mm-hmm. you know, because your name just keeps cropping up in newspapers and you talk about the land acquisition.
Yep.
What has that process been like for you over the last, let's say, five years?
We've really dove into it, I would say, probably in the last 5 years. That's when we really started to focus on it. Back in, 2019 is when Ho-Chunk Farms bought its first piece of land. And that was more of trying to help a local farmer out that needed to finish up a 1031 tax exchange. He's like, I got to sell some land. All right, we're ready. Let's buy it. So we bought a little bit. And then after getting to the point where we're almost at full capacity when it comes to the tribal land and the allotment land, it's like, well, we really need to focus on our growth. What's some of our risk factors when it comes to long-term growth? Well, it's access to land. And like I said, our reservation is 120, 130,000 acres. Our tribe owns a very small amount of that. And a lot of what we do own is woodland area. Mm-hmm. So we have tons of natural resources, but a lot of our farmland is owned by non-natives on the reservation. So really start working towards implementing a system or a strategy that allows us to start acquiring farmland. Last couple of years, it's been hard to buy farm ground. It's really expensive. Mm-hmm. Some people don't want to sell because they can rent it for so high. They're like, we were getting ready for this transition. I think we're all seeing it now in 2024 of the land values. They're going to start coming back down. Corn's $4 now. It's not $7. Yep. So what does that look like for the future? Well, we've put ourselves in a position to take advantage of every opportunity that comes up. So I would say in the last 5 years, the tribe's bought over 500 acres, I would say. In a tough market, that's a lot. And especially for limited resources that our tribe does have. And we're not buying this stuff cheap. I think you read about my article. Mm-hmm. It's not cheap.
No.
And so we've done everything we can to capitalize on that. I'm actually working on some legislative stuff that I think could really help us move in that direction. We're all familiar with farming. You look at the average age of a farmer. Well, it just continues to get higher.
Yeah.
Every year. And the small family farms are starting to become a thing of the past. Like the kids are actually going and getting educated. And now people that grew up on farms, they're not coming back and farming. They're becoming doctors or they're doing all this stuff. And we see the opportunity coming right out ahead of us of the opportunity to buy land. And I think we're going to start seeing that in the next couple of years when the land values come down a little bit more and people can't be renting it for what they really were getting in the last couple of years. So So yeah, I've been working with the tribe, and the tribe has been very supportive of land growth. I mean, they want to own the whole reservation one day. That's a part of their goals. But is it feasible? Do we have the capital resources to do so? No. Mm-hmm. There's probably some things that we can fight for that would help us get to that position. But yeah, we've been doing what we can. Yeah.
Let me ask a question that it seems obvious to me, but it's probably opening a can of worms, and it's probably a dumb question. But you said there's 120,000 acres on the reservation, mm-hmm. right? Why do you not have access to farm all of that? You mentioned that there's non-natives that own ground mm-hmm. on the reservation.
Yep.
Like, so for me, from the outside looking in and not understanding how all this works, that to me just doesn't add up.
Yep. Nope. That's a pretty common thing for people that don't quite get to learn about what the tribes and reservations and what they've experienced. Mm-hmm. So our Winnebago Reservation, like I said, 130,000 acres. You go back to the I don't even want to say a year because I'll probably be wrong, but there was a bill called the Dawes Act, and it's the General Allotment Act, tons of different names, but it talks about how the government, so we got moved all over the place. Winnebago mm-hmm. tribe, well, the Ho-Chunks got moved all over. We end up in Northeast Nebraska. We are here with the Omaha tribe, which is our neighboring tribe. And we buy this part of our reservation from them, and we have 130,000 acres, and say our population had been decreased through all the movements. We've lost tons of people. Well, now we only have a couple hundred tribal members living here. Mm-hmm. And the government's like, well, here, this is your reservation. This is where you're going to live. Then they come to realize, you guys have a little too much land for the amount of people that are there. Well, you just got done trying to kill us off, mm-hmm. but you got a little bit too much. So we're actually going to sell off a portion. So they sold a portion of our reservation through that act. They delegated, said, hey, this family, you have 80 acres, you have 80, 100, mm-hmm. whatever the number might be. And then anything left over, we're going to sell it. So this happened in the mid 1900s that really caused the Winnebago tribe to lose a huge portion of their reservation.
So when they sold that stuff off, it still was designated as reservation, but
the reservation owned. Boundaries never changed. They just sold within the reservation boundaries, the excess land.
Yeah.
But on top of that, then you have tribal members within the reservation that don't know anything about tax structures. They don't know anything about that. Yeah. Hey, you want to go see a doctor? Oh, sign off on leverage your land and I'll let you come get some medicine. Then they lose their land that way.
Yep, yep.
So there was tons of different policies and things put in place by the federal government that caused us to lose our reservation over a long period of time. And then it took until the structure of trust land to be implemented, when the government was like, wow, you guys are losing it all really, really fast. How can we protect you? Well, they implemented the federal trust. And that's what a lot of our reservation is in right now. Federal trust, you don't pay taxes on it. That was kind of their way of saving us from mm-hmm. not losing our land due to not paying your taxes. It also doesn't allow you to leverage it for a bank loan. There's tons of different issues that come along with that. But that's how the government implemented something that stopped us from losing our entire reservation before it was too late. And we're kind of still fighting that. So
that makes it a lot clearer for me. So now you're in a mode where you're going, okay, all this happened. We still have the boundaries of the reservation. We'd like to work towards getting that land back, getting the ownership of that land back. Yep. So that's what a lot of folks are looking at. And then are you also looking outside of the reservation when you're buying ground as well?
We haven't. Okay. For us, our priority is our reservation.
Okay.
I mean, we want to reclaim our land back. We're not asking for it for free. We're not doing that. We're putting ourselves in an economic situation to buy it. But yeah, that's really our goal is to acquire it back. And it's important. I think Ho-Chunk Farms plays a really key role in that, because if we're buying land, we need to be having something in place on the back end, some sort of system in place to capitalize on those acquisitions. Sure. So that's what Farms does. That's how this partnership between us and the tribe works through land acquisitions is, hey, we want to buy this land for, say, $10,000 an acre. Well, we know we have Ho-Chunk Farms here that'll pay X amount of dollars for the next however many years we're in existence. Mm-hmm. from a bank standpoint, they're like, okay, that makes sense to me. You got your own entity that's going to farm it. Mm-hmm. So we play a pretty key role in that because sure. we eliminate the risk. What's the risk when you're buying land? You don't farm it or nobody wants to lease it. Well, these guys are going to lease it from yeah. us. And we're going to make some money on it on top of that. And that goes got back it. To the tribe too. So
makes sense.
So it's a key tool to mm-hmm. making these acquisitions mm-hmm. work.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Yeah. You know, have you run into any blowback with this?
I'm not the most popular guy to the local farmers, but I mean, I think it's something that has always needed to happen. We have,
Now, why aren't you the most popular guy? Just cause you're buying the land back or they don't like what's going on here?
I think it's more of so what Ho-Chunk Farms operates under is our own law. And that's one great thing about being a tribe is you have the ability to create your own laws. Mm. And we've taken that for a ride. We've said, well, if we can create our own law, we're gonna develop this policy that puts our tribal entities in a position to succeed. And we have that right as our own government. And so when Ho-Chunk Farm started, they implemented the Winnebago land lease policy, which isn't the most popular because it allows Ho-Chunk Farms to match any bid. All of our land has always been just put out there for a general bid, highest bidder gets it, whatever. But that's not saying that one farmer farms this and the other farmer's this, and he says, hey, you don't bid on mine, I won't bid on yours, and we'll both get a deal on this thing. Well, that whole opportunity has gone away now because Ho-Chunk Farms will just come in and match it if it's mm-hmm. under fair market value.
Yep.
So that's why I say I'm probably not the most liked person by our local farmers because now we've come in and we've added an element that holds them accountable to pay fair market value. Yep. And it allowed us to grow really fast. I mean, when I started in 2016, 800 acres. Mm-hmm. By 2022, we were at 6,500. Fast, tons of growth. And we've seen the land lease averages go up. Now we're yeah. meeting fair market value where they should have been for the last 100 years. And that element has not always been the most popular. But I mean, it's our land. We should have the right to farm this. I think a lot of our local farmers just got comfortable with the process.
Yeah.
And now that we're a lot more sophisticated and we're ready to make some change and we want to take over and manage our own land and farm it the way we think it needs to be farmed, mm-hmm. Because you're not going to find somebody that cares more about the land and the long-term sustainability of it than a tribal member.
Right.
So, but it's allowed us to do a lot of things. I mean, 9 full-time positions at Ho-Chunk Farms. That's awesome because mm-hmm. not only are we taking over the management practices in a way that, I mean, we're probably over conservative when it comes to soil conservation and water conservation because we want it to be here for 7 generations. Yeah, that's our goal. Yeah. Is that the goal of the farmer that won the high bid? He's probably trying to see how much money he can make on that piece of land for the next 5 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even going to blame him. I mean, it's a short-term transaction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're in it for the long haul and they're not. Yeah. So sometimes that can rub people wrong or people might not like it, but that's the reality of what we're trying to do. Because like I said, ain't nobody going to take care of our land better than mm-hmm. tribal members.
So when you say you went from 800 to 6,000, was that taking a lot of like cash lease stuff back or does that just straight up you guys bought?
Nope. Those are all leases we've bought. And like I said, we've bought in quite a few 100 acres, mm-hmm. but 90% of that is leased. We lease it from the Winnebago tribe and then the Winnebago tribal members, which the Bureau of Indian Affairs manages the leases for them.
Were they leasing that ground to independent farmers prior?
Yep. Okay. And I mean, our farmers are a huge part of our economy still. We're not just trying to push everybody out and seem like the bad guys. So we do contract out a lot of our work. We're slowly getting to where we have one full machinery line, but we have 7,000 acres from Sloan, Iowa to Wakefield, Nebraska. We can't do that all with one.
Yeah.
So I actually have 3 contractors that work for me that kind of helps the local farmers too. Mm-hmm. So we're not just pushing mm-hmm. them out, but, excuse me, but it's just, it's an element of the business. We need to make money and we want to be able to make the choices, the long-term choices for our tribal land. So mm-hmm.
how does the, that whole concept and what you guys are trying to grow come back around full circle to what we were originally speaking about with the food security and the sovereignty and that kind of thing?
To me, I see it's full circle. Some of it's like, it's kind of on its own. I talk about a lot of our growth because we're doing a lot of different things in the community when it comes to trying to change the perception of a farmer and things like that. Like I said, we don't have young people that got to grow up on farms around here, but we're taking those steps to do that. And that's why, I mean, we started a diversified ag program at Little Priest Tribal College. Ho-Chunk Farms helped start that. And that's really because if Ho-Chunk Farms is going to go to that next level, it's not going to be me. It's not going to be the next farm manager that I just hired. It's going to be those next people, those next leaders that are, say, at Winnebago Public School right now or whatever that looks like. So if we're going to be trying to push opportunities or teach people about the ag industry and how Native Americans need to occupy this space, or we can occupy this space, it's not just the non-native thing. That's, farmers aren't just non-natives. Native Americans can be farmers. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to be knocking down all these barriers and putting all this effort into growing the next generation of leaders, we need to be growing on the back end to sustain all those opportunities. So that's why I say it all kind of comes full circle, because we need to be expanding our land base. We need to be expanding our business approach when it comes to diversification, say livestock, whatever that might be. There's ideas that I will never think of that the next generation is going to bring in for Ho-Chunk Farms, but we have to continue to grow. I mean, it's a business too. It's not just this social activity that we're doing in Winnebago. It's a business that needs to be sustained
in that way.
So, but it all comes full circle, because then a lot of these people get introduced into ag and they realize, wow, it's not just driving a big tractor and planting corn. Ag is so much bigger than that.
Yeah.
And we already see that. We see kids going to school, for whether it's at Little Priest or the university, that have ideas that I would have never thought of. And that's what I encourage, and that's the environment I want to create for Ho-Chunk Farms. Mm-hmm. So it all boils down to the growth of the company. And I think that's only going to enhance all the food security efforts that we're taking, and all the different types of changes we're trying to make when it comes to physical wellness and change in the community. Mm-hmm. So, but we need land, we need opportunities, we need all of that to keep it going.
Yeah.
Ho-Chunk Farms needs what all farms need, you know, right? Yeah. So that's what we're getting at here.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me too. And I think we kind of mentioned this on the way up here when we were driving. It's like everything kind of comes back around, you know, like at some point we're just doing, feels like something innovative, but it was something that was done 100 years ago or whatever. And in this scenario, it's such an interesting conversation for me, because I think of Native Americans as the original farmers, that like my folks, my family that moved here learned all of that stuff from the natives. And now it's kind of like flipping, where, you know, the story that you've been, or the picture you've been painting for us, is that you guys haven't been doing this for so many years, and now you're trying to get back into it and implement the practices and, you know, take off on your own this way. So it's so interesting for me, because it's a little bit backwards than what I was kind of thinking. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. There's this term that's being thrown around in the ag industry right now, and it's regenerative farming.
Yeah.
And that's something that we had a group come here, and they were trying to teach us what regenerative farming was. And we sat there and listened. Mm-hmm. But at the end of it, it's like, that's just a native concept of farming. That's exactly. Nothing new.
Exactly.
That's what we always do. Yeah. And they were trying to sell this great idea. And it's like, yeah, that's great. We're already doing that. Yeah. And now, I mean, it's actually been incorporated into our ag programs and stuff here. There's not a lot of regenerative studies, but I mean, if you just came and experienced our farm for a day, you would realize, I mean, the whole concept is give what you take, or give more back to the land than you've taken. Mm-hmm. And we've always taken that approach when it comes to farming, when it comes to fertility management, soil management, water management, whatever that might be. We consider the soil, the water, all that in the calculation more than anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have this regenerative poultry operation that we're building right now. And it's like, this is just what we do. I mean, it's nothing new.
Yeah.
But that's a huge buzzword right now.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. White oaks out there on the East Coast and their regenerative practices. And it's like, no.
And it is when you get, I mean, people like to use those fancy words and buzzwords and marketing words and all that kind of stuff. But when you get down to it, it's just kind of like the right way to do it. It's the most efficient long-term solution. I mean,
Yeah. If you're not looking for a quick buck and you really do want the land to be sustainable and to be able to give back.
Yeah.
Got to take care of it.
Yep, for sure.
Oh. Yep, it's a different ROI equation that most people don't consider.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and like you talked about earlier, I mean, I know a lot of farmers, and I know a lot of guys and ladies who take the same approach to the ownership and valuing the land and giving back and all those kinds of things that, you know, you were speaking about. But there are a lot of scenarios where people are farming ground that they have no emotional ties whatsoever to.
Yep.
And that is not getting taken care of.
You know, and that's the environment that's created on the reservation. Yeah. Through short-term lease policy, yeah. Like through a through a three-year lease structure, like, oh, all of our leases are on 3 years. You think they're taking care of it the way that,
right?
When you, it's, I mean, it's a blind bid. You submit your bid. If you don't win it, are you going to invest a lot of money in soil fertility and soil management?
And it's probably not. and that's not even just like a speculation. Like Andy and I can tell you for a fact, because him and I were involved in dealing with some soil products in the regenerative space. Biological space for a number of years. And that was one of the most common rebuttals that I got from guys was, I've only got this thing for 2 or 3 years. Why would I put that in it? Yeah. Even though it's the best stuff for the long term.
You know? I like your product. I like your pitch. I would do that, but this might not even be mine.
And it's just a fact. That's the decision that get made. Mm-hmm. It's all monetary decisions. Yeah. But so, anything else, Andy? I mean, I'm very interesting. I'm glad we came over here.
Well, yeah, me too. I could talk to Aaron for another couple hours but we better let him go. Yeah. So, no, I really do want to come back and check out some of your practices you talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I talked to your brother Kenny. He's talking about maybe doing some turkey hunting coming around the spring. Maybe we can come back and do a little
bit
of that.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll be around.
All right. There we go. So, I just really appreciate you taking the time and meeting with us.
So. Yeah, Aaron, thanks so much, man. It's great. Looking forward to maybe speaking with you sometime again.
For sure.
All right. Cool. Well, let's wrap it up, huh?
Later.
All right. See ya.